It's the great Dante Read Through.
It's the great Dante Read Through, where we are reading through all of the comic strip, The Adventures of Nicolai Dante. Co-created by Robbie Morrison and Simon Fraser from the weekly science fiction anthology comic, 2000 AD.
I'm Simon Fraser.
And I'm Edie Nugent, freelance writer and Simon's wife. Join us as we swashbuckle our way through the Russian Empire of the future. Warning, there will be spoilers. We will be talking in depth about these comics, so if you haven't read them yet, listen at your own risk. To join our book club and read along with us, go to shop.2000ad.com to pick up the books in hard copy or digital.
Today we're reading Primal Screams, found in Progs 1433 to 1436, Devil's Deal, found in Prog 2006, and Usurper, found in Progs 1487 to 1489.
Hi, Simon.
Hi, Edie.
And hello, Irregulars.
Hello.
And welcome back to the Great Dante Read Through.
Great Dante Read Through.
Great Dante Read Through. Woo-hoo. And we begin with Primal Screams. Good band.
Yes. yeah, it was running through my head as
was speak. It? Yeah. I know, I couldn't not think of like Screamadelica reading this.
And then I saw the cover, and I was like,
and since we're not looking at the Hachettes anymore, though I imagine in the Hachette book of this, this part of the story, they probably include this cover, because how could you not?
Yeah.
Do we know who drew this cover? We're looking at a cover of a unconvincingly ginger Dante in a kilt, sort of getting hung up, hoisted up by his, strap,
sash
yeah. By a rhino man in a blue suit.
And he's green. The rhino is green. So this is drawn by Cliff Robinson, the wonderful Cliff Robinson. And I presume it's colored by Dylan Teague, because Dylan seems to color all of Cliff's stuff. But I don't know. I can't see it marked anywhere. And I don't have the prog information here. So if it is Dylan, hi, Dylan. Very bright, very... very green. And Cliff, yes. Very nice hairy legs. Good job.
See, he took the time to draw the hair
he
on Dante.
He did take the time. The hair is there.
There you go.
Yeah.
There was something that, I don't know what it was that kind of like bugged me about this image. It's not the rendering.
No, it's
the
rendering's
perfectly
well drawn.
Good.
He did the pleats. Actually, no. The problem with, as a Scotsman, and I should point out that there's some inaccuracies here, but that doesn't particularly matter because Dante's not a Scotsman and he's cartooned from
the
future.
He does have kind of like a weird pleated
The kilt doesn't have the flat front of the kilt isn't there. He just pleats all round, which isn't how a kilt works. And also the ski and do's on the left side, which it should be on the right.
Oh.
And also, I don't know what's going on with that jacket. It's like a pipe major jacket. It's not with the jabot and the cuffs. It's some kind
but
of weird
future Scotsman
thing. Okay.
I don't know. There was just something where this is probably just because it's inside baseball for me, because this is the comic that you and Robbie worked on, that it was like, oh, we're getting to the Scottish exploitation issue.
Getting to the Scottish self-hate issue. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get into it.
Yep.
Let's turn the page, shall we?
Let's see what looks what's in due for us next.
Yes. And who wrote it? Who drew it? Who lettered it?
It's written by Robbie Morrison. Aye. And drawn by John Burns. And lettered by Annie Parkhouse.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Okay. So we open on a shot of Solomon's Palace, a casino pleasure dome, which sits astride the Victoria Falls.
Rather improbably cantilevered out there, but sure.
Yeah, it seems a little top heavy, doesn't it?
But fine. Some sort of neoclassical, neo-futurist.
It's got thrusters under there somewhere, keeping the back end
so.
Up.
I hope so.
So apparently it's a casino pleasure dome, and its pleasure quarters rival those of the House of Sin. But don't get excited, because we don't get to see any of them at all in this story.
Okay.
I was kind of disappointed. I mean, I guess we see arguably a burlesque show, but it's not, you know, that's not to rival the House of Sin.
We do get to see rather a lot of Lauren.
We do. So that's what you get excited for. We have in a little voiceover about the Pleasure Dome here. It says, free your inner beast. And this is apparently drawn from the advertisement in the Imperial Times travelogue. 2672.
Yes.
I thought we briefly strayed into 2673 at one point, and then we like snapped back to 2672. So I'm just wondering if any listeners noticed if that occurred. And if it did, there's a no prize to someone who can explain why we jumped in time that way and then jumped back.
I think you're the only one paying attention, baby.
I may be the only one who cares, but it was bothering me. I don't know why. I just had to say it.
I don't think I've ever paid any attention to the dates, ever.
So we cut inside Solomon's Palace Casino and Pleasure Dome, and we meet again the BoJack Horseman-style animal people who we first met in episode 4, Moscow Duelists.
It's about 15 years before BoJack Horseman, but yeah.
It was, yes. But, you know, it's this is what I think of now when there are animal people wearing clothes.
Yeah. So this is my fault. I'm responsible for this.
I was wondering, this is we've got a Scottish dude-ish dude romping around in what seems to be Africa, and I wondered if this was because of you.
No. Well, no, yes. Well, I mean, okay, not because of the reason that's obvious. This goes back to Moscow Duelists, where we had talking animals, and it was referenced that they were from the houses of Numa and Tantor, which is of course a riff on Tarzan, Edgar Rice Burroughs, and apparently crazed environmentalists for some reason had used mad science to turn endangered species intelligent.
Right. So they could fight for themselves against being...
Or just fight amongst themselves.
Yeah, well, that's what happened.
Apparently. Lust after human women, because that's what you do. this is some kind of mad Island of Dr. Moreau stuff.
So wait, why is this your fault? I'm still not sure.
Well, I created I drew the characters first in Moscow Duelists. It was me that drew them at first.
I see.
So this crazy uniform here is mine, I think.
Oh, some version of mine. The Lion King we've got here. We're inside the casino.
Yeah.
We see a Lion King getting rowdy at the roulette table while a panther in a white dinner jacket tries to calm him down.
Right. So I get some kind of Rudyard Kipling influences. This is like the sort of... What if the Jungle Book went wrong?
Yes, and the panther is sort of like the manager.
I love that the animal men are having lustful thoughts for the human women for reasons, because that's what...
Well, but that's the human intelligence part, clearly. They included the...
Okay.
The sexuality, right? They're hybrids, so... Uh-huh. I mean, one would hope they also, like, still have their animal lusts. That would be kind of sad if they didn't.
I'm a little uncomfortable. I mean, this was done, I think, when I was living in Nairobi.
And that's
I think
what I was
uncomfortable with it at the time. Yeah. It's just like, really wild animal people running Africa?
I made this comment back in episode 4, actually, that I thought... It's... Because I think we originally got introduced to the gorilla people, which I found really unfortunate way of
House
sort of...
Kong.
Sort of introducing this, given, you know, sort of the overtones of... sort of how colonialism views the many countries of Africa.
What happened to the Africans, by the way? Are they just being ruled over nobody by
knows.
Wild animals?
Who knows? Yeah, it's never explained. I mean, they do kind of, I think later we get a shot of sort of like the because we do sort of reintroduce, I feel like we get a couple issues in and Robbie maybe thought, you know, I might need to explain this again. Like, it was a long time ago we met these characters. So for those that didn't read back then, he gives a little summary of sort of how the human activists made this happen. And there's a shot of kind of like a gorilla sort of like raising the flag over a city that's sort of crumbled. So I guess the idea is that they've completely taken over and killed all of the human inhabitants.
This is just an excuse of talking gorillas.
Yeah.
It's a trope.
Yeah. I will say I'm loving the way John Burns renders them.
I don't love his gorillas.
We're looking right now at the panthers and the lions.
The lions are very good. The panther is okay. The rhinos are pretty good. The gorillas are terrible.
Yeah.
Sorry, John Burns.
Yeah.
And the naked Lauren with the pom-poms is, of course, excellent.
Of course, perfect and excellent. Because that's what you hire.
That's why you hire John Burns.
That's why you hire for the beautiful cheesecake. And here we get it all over. So
it's just everywhere.
So the Panther manager heads backstage to check on their star, who is billed as Aisha the Irresistible.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And Aisha is a very familiar looking blonde who struts around in a thong, high heels, and some feather fans.
Yeah.
And apparently she's made audiences orgasm just by sashaying on stage.
Okay.
Well, all right then. Mm-hmm.
Some job security there.
So the Panther man hits on her, and she says no, and then says something about it's not just panthers that have claws, wink, wink, which okay. will become we'll important later.
Yeah.
So a chimpanzee announcer welcomes Aisha the Irresistible on stage, and she sort of does her burlesque thing while singing. And listen, I gotta say, I'm always impressed by dancers who do routines while singing. That's very hard.
And heels.
So in heels.
With fans.
I'm
yeah.
saying it's impressive.
Yeah.
And so she's apparently adapted King of the Swingers from the Jungle Book, which wouldn't these animal folks find that offensive?
Maybe they will.
Or at least be tired of that joke by now. They must get it a lot.
This whole story is just like layering just, God, I don't know, cringe. It's just cringe.
It's silly cringe, though.
It's a
though.
Big mountain of cringe.
I feel like it's silly enough that it doesn't,
okay.
I don't know, maybe I'm just used to
know.
It now.
I gotta say, this is on the subject of the art. Now, this is John Burns moving into fully painted, which he did for a bit here. He's been sort of sliding this way for a while, a couple of years, moving more and more into impressionist painting, which I kind of think is partly works and partly doesn't work. Why? Because I think he's composition is as ever excellent, and his drawing is as ever very, very good. But I think that the painting tends to lose structure a little bit, and it's a little bit vague, and the eye doesn't necessarily move around the page correctly anymore. I think I understand the effort, and I appreciate this. And by the way, I'm not slagging him off.
It's beautifully painted.
One of the things that makes
him great. You're talking about storytelling issues.
Yeah, I just think as comics, painting comics is a problem. It's difficult. Mm-hmm. It doesn't help. It usually hinders the storytelling. And the reason John Burns is such a great artist is because he's not complacent about his abilities. He's pushing himself and trying things all the time. So I don't feel this works very well. I think it kind of falls apart, breaks down compositionally. But, you know, noble effort.
And also, you know, that's your taste, right? This is all
well,
subjective.
Yeah.
It is.
We could get into the whole thing about painted comics and why I think they don't work. But anyway.
Anyways, so who interrupts this show of Lauren doing King of the Swingers but a suspiciously familiar-looking ginger man in an elaborate kilt shouting at Lauren / Aisha to show us her pie?
Okay.
It's Quentin Durward.
Okay.
We haven't heard that fake name in a while.
Yep.
Apparently he's a Scottish Knight of the Realm.
Well, it's a Sir Walter Scott reference, of course. I think we've used it before.
He absolutely has.
Quentin Durward before.
Certainly Quentin something. I don't know why Durward sounded different to me, but I don't know. I'm probably wrong about that. We get some really fun phonetic Scottish accent action here.
Yeah.
And I will say that oot drink, oot fight, and oot shag anyone catchphrase is much better than that out love thing that
yes.
he said all the way back
right.
in the long ago, which is apparently still also bothering me.
Should be just out fuck.
Out shag. It?
It
should be
out
fuck, of course. But for some reason, even though we can show boobies.
Yeah.
And close-ups of ladies' nether regions barely covered in a thong, which we'll get later, we cannot say fuck, so that's a
we
line.
We do see some Quentin Durward backside later on.
We do, indeed.
So, respect for trying that.
So, Quentin, is...
yeah, this is definitely Dickalai.
Yeah. I mean, what... He's gambling loudly...
Yeah.
While poor Aisha is trying to continue her show. And, like, what is it with the show interruptions? This is such a Dante thing to interrupt someone else's show. Like, we saw it in The Full Dante, which was the origin of the Dickalai Nante name.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is his thing, is to interrupt other people's performances.
He has to be the center of attention. I don't understand this plan. It doesn't really make any sense.
Mm-mm.
I mean, I don't. It doesn't seem to be a plan. They're just
no,
like showing up and goofing around. And then, for some reason, Lauren forgets the plan entirely and goes rogue.
Listen.
For no reason.
This is so annoying. So anyway, this sort of lioness woman, I think, in a blue dress, decides to try and grope Quentin up his kilt to see.
She's supposed to be a hyena.
Is it a hyena?
The markings
sense.
On the hair look like
hyena
markings.
Hyena.
But she's definitely more human than
we'll
hyena.
Say hyena.
Mm-hmm.
She tries to grope Quentin up his kilt to see what a true Scotsman wears under his kilt. And I just thought we should pause for like a public service announcement mm-hmm. about men wearing kilts.
Okay.
Do you want to go for that?
No, please do. I'm touched that you want to do this.
We've had this discussion.
We have.
We've had this discussion many times about how when Scottish men, or I assume men in general, but I think especially Scottish men, mm-hmm. wear kilts, certain individuals, I don't want to just single out women here because it's probably not just women, certain individuals seem to think that this is an invitation to reach their hands up the kilts of just random people they barely know or have not met yet and grope them.
Yes, and you kind of have to wonder, like, what exactly are they thinking here? What's the best result from this they can possibly expect? And usually the result is kind of like, oh, and then embarrassment all around. But there's no good result from this, and there's no good result from sexual harassment of any human being. And reaching up anybody's skirt to grab their genitalia is a bad idea.
Don't do it. No matter how drunk you get,
don't do it.
I don't care if it's your bachelor or bachelorette party. You do not have the right to reach up somebody's skirt.
It's very
skirt.
Unpleasant.
It's very like, not nice.
It's not nice.
There is a weird sexualization thing that happens with guys in kilts, for sure. I don't mean weird in the sense that it doesn't make sense. It does make sense. It's a sexy outfit, right? I mean, that's just the way it is.
Hopefully.
It's very sexy.
One does one's
best.
Let's
be honest. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fun fact, I didn't see Simon in a kilt until our wedding day. That was the first time I ever
saw
him.
Just saving it for special.
It absolutely worked. He made sure I wasn't going to pull a runaway bride.
Just curiosity. He looked too good.
Yeah. No, you looked too good. You looked amazing. You really did. It's because it is kind of this cultural thing of like reach up a kilt. It's seen largely, I'd say, culturally as a cheeky woman thing.
It's harmless.
I think it's seen kind of like the sort of Papa Yeltsin hitting on Dante is seen, where it's like we're reversing the sexism. So because it's a woman reaching up a dude's undercarriage, somehow that's like taking the power back or something.
But there is no reverse sexism.
No, there
isn't.
There's just sexism. Yeah. Well, there's, sexual harassment.
Sexual harassment is just sexual harassment.
Yeah.
And it's not nice, and
it's
don't
not
do
nice.
It.
Thank no, you. Don't. Please don't do it. So that's our public service announcement. If you're going to reach up a Scottish man's kilt, do him the courtesy of having a consensual hookup, then you can do that.
There
if that's
go.
What you're after.
Fine.
I'm if, not if, saying that like
if
I've
everyone,
done it.
If everyone's into it. It's fine.
If everyone's into it, it's fine.
If you haven't asked permission, don't do
that's
it.
That's right.
By
that's
and large,
right.
that's good advice in life.
It is.
If you think you might be in risky territory and you haven't asked permission, don't do it.
That's a good idea. Always a good idea.
Life advice from comic artists.
It's not like fun and cool and edgy for you to do that. Anyway.
Okay, Quentin Durward.
Back, pulling it back in. Yeah. It just really does bug me because I didn't realize culturally how messed up that was until you and I started talking about it like years ago. And then I was kind of shocked by it. But we do get this wonderful line from Dante. I'm sorry, Quentin. We're not supposed to know he's Dante yet. I like to get to know somebody before I let them fondle my sporran. I don't know why I thought that was really good. Fondle my sporran.
Or the ski and do even. I mean, there's all these, it's a metaphor. The whole thing is a metaphor, obviously.
So Quentin starts making out with the hyena lady, much to the consternation of Lauren Aisha, who, as you were saying before, explodes with rage and suddenly breaks Dante's cover by yelling, "Damn you, Nikolai Dante," loudly and randomly punching this other sort of hyena-looking guy in a tux.
Too? I mean, can't she like...
Also, why does she punch the hyena in front of her? He didn't do anything.
I don't know.
He's just there in a tux.
He's just being a hyena.
And she just punches him because she's mad, I guess.
Maybe.
And so apparently they're there to rob the casino and Lauren's just ruined their cover for no reason. This is a really weird...
This is so bad.
I mean, we have seen Lauren be a little jealous. Like, we have seen that before. But this is...
This is insanity.
This is really insanity.
There's like simmering rage and then there's just bananas.
I know, it is bananas.
But, you know, nice shot of her butt in her
nice
back
Nice shot of her butt.
Thanks, John Burns.
And so Dante claims he had to kiss the lioness, I'm sorry, the hyena, because she was about to go up his kilt and find out that the carpet doesn't match the drapes. And that was apparently going to blow their cover.
But that would require her lifting up his kilt.
Which she was
looking.
Kind of doing a little bit. She was sort of like, but here's the thing. I'm like, really, wouldn't she just assume that he had a bad red hair dye job or something? Like, why would she immediately be like, you know, clearly that would be effort. The thing that says this is Nicolai Dante and not Quentin whatever is like, oh, black pubic hair. Uh-oh, it's Dante.
Here's the thing about...
Seems weird.
Here's the thing about kilt. Isn't actually about 8 yards of fabric, all pleated. So there's a lot of fabric there. So that's why it hangs as the way it does. If you pick up the hem of the kilt and lift it up, all the way up, you're not going to see anything because the thing hangs down so much and there's so much extra material, you don't see anything. So you literally, to lift up someone's kilt to see underneath, you would have to grab big armfuls of it and pick it up.
I was going to say, yeah, it's like gathering a large down. Skirt.
There's no way, logistically, this woman's going to accidentally see Dante's pubes.
Listen, this is obviously an excuse.
Yes,
Nicolai Dante wanted to make out with the hot hyena, and this was his excuse.
Fair.
Okay.
Yep.
He had it. He had an excuse to
this
do
it. This is a James Bond quote, by the way.
Which is?
The curtain matching the drapes.
Oh, the cuffs, collar matching the cuffs, I think is what he says. I said curtain matching.
Sean Connery said it's a Tiffany case, played by Jill St. John, as I recall.
Because she was a redhead. Which one was this?
Is it Thunderball? I don't remember which one. Is it from...
Again, we bring up Thunderball.
Is it Thunderball? Or it's not from Russia with Love. I don't remember which one it is. It's a younger Connery.
The one with the redhead.
Jill St. John. Is it Live and Let Die, maybe?
Mm. But he says, does the collar match the cuffs?
Yes, he says that to her. Okay. And yeah, so yeah, it's a...
Equally kind of gross.
She says something about... Do you like redheads? And he goes, as long as the collar matches the cuffs.
Oh, I see. He'd clearly kick a hot redhead out of bed if he sees that her pubes are not the right color.
Or, I mean, Jill St. John in her prime. So, just saying.
I don't believe it. Yes. I'm not convinced.
It's a Bond quote.
It is. Anyway, it's a Bond thing. I mean,
moving
I,
on.
I'm not going to try and moralize Bond here. There's just no point.
There's no point.
So, anyways... Now the Panther Man is on to them and surrounds them with his rhino thugs, telling them to kill Dante, but to keep his head intact for the big reward that the Tsar has put on his head.
Love these rhinos. Great rhinos.
They really are great rhino looming thugs in suits.
And respect. This is a man who's obviously spent a lot of time looking at naked ladies because he's very, very good at drawing real lady flesh. It's not like idealized. It's not like...
It's not airbrushed.
It does not look fake at all. It looks like a real human being.
Yes.
Respect
the,
for
the sort of the folds and the skin of her back as she moves
and she's
like that.
Clearly a woman with flesh and her bones and skin and moves and it articulates absolutely beautifully.
She looks amazing through this whole thing. Yeah. No
fantastic.
Question. Okay. So we move on to the next Prague.
Yep. There you go.
And the fight continues, and we learn that the crest apparently can help Dante put on an accent. In case you were thinking that Dante was just doing a horrible Scottish accent that whole first issue, which I assumed that's what was happening.
is this some kind of linguistic ability that can
something
do daft accents?
Okay. Yes. And so they continue to fight in a room overlooking the falls with these rhino dudes. Mm-hmm. And they throw a few of the rhino dudes crashing through this wall of window that looks over the falls.
And I know I've said this before, and I will say it again, and I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. People do not run at plate glass and go through
and
it.
Crash
they
it.
Just bounce off it. It is armored. It is secure. It is architecturally strong. I mean, it is really...
I mean, are we going to make...
Especially over the top of... I mean...
No, that's fair. It would be reinforced if it
was
over
no
the
way.
Top of
Even
falls.
A rhino man
I was
going to
say
bump.
Rhino is probably what we're... A MacGuffin here is that...
Maybe.
But the rhino's got his horn pointed down. And
listen... Robbie and I have got history in this. He had Shimura run through a plate glass window once and survive.
And you're mad about it.
I'm still mad about it 30 years later.
You know, there was that famous scene in Texas Chainsaw Massacre where the woman runs through a window, an upstairs window. I can't remember exactly when it was. She runs out a window and she crashes through a window. And that movie was like made on a shoestring budget. So she actually ran through a window and like cut herself up for real. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Yeah,
she,
yeah, yeah.
Did she survive?
She did survive. She absolutely survived. But it was a thing. She actually did run out a window. But that was like a really crappy window in an old abandoned house that they happened to find. Not a big reinforced...
I was reading a thing on Reddit the other day about this guy who had, to prove the point of how strong the windows were in his multi-million dollar building, he ran at this plate glass window, give it its full body weight. And the glass held, but the frame didn't. So he went through the whole thing with the glass and landed like four stories below and was killed. But the glass survived the accident. It didn't break.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
I know. It's spectacular.
I did not foresee that anecdote ending that way.
Sorry about that.
Oh my God.
But yeah, it underlines the fact that the glass is not going to move. So yeah. maybe he could have shifted the pane through. Maybe he could have pushed out the frame.
But see crashing through glass. Anyway. All right. This is apparently the pedantic episode. We're getting super pedantic. So in any event, still surrounded by a large number of the rhinos, Dante decides to throw himself and Lauren out through the broken part of the window.
And down the Victoria Falls.
Into the Victoria Falls.
I'm not sure anyone has ever done this and survived. Certainly not wearing 8 yards of wool.
No.
No, Lauren might.
Yeah. So then we get the little summary I mentioned before mm-hmm. about why there are these sentient animal people. Okay. And, you know, this is where I'm talking about. You can see the two, I think, a gorilla person and a mm-hmm. lion person hoisting a flag over sort of a pile of rubble and maybe bodies in there.
Who knows?
So this is sort of...
somewhat vague.
Throwing in the history of how these houses that are ruled by the dominant species managed to take over. Right.
Okay.
I guess large parts of Africa. It's not said if it's all the countries or one or two countries. But apparently the czar manipulates these various houses ruled by these dominant species and plays them against each other.
Well, that's how you do it. If you're
the czar just has one song and he keeps on singing it.
But that's how you do it. That's how you control large swathes of empire because you manipulate.
This is what he's doing right now. That's how the British controlled India. Akita.
Yeah, but that's how the British controlled India, and there's no way to invade a country and control it by military force. You have to use the local indigenous forces to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that works.
Anyway, one of the castles we see, I think this is Castle Numa,
mm-hmm.
As a location of the castle of the lions, based on the giant open-mouthed lion entryway, which is very Thundercats. And I'm very much wondering if this is a Thundercats reference we're seeing here.
Maybe.
So inside, the lion royalty / nobles share some kind of a carcass. I couldn't quite figure out.
It's like a gnu.
Oh, yeah. See the face there. It's sort
cross
of
between a gnu and a Cape Buffalo. I think it's a Cape Buffalo.
So they're eating a carcass on a big dining table together, which is kind of nice. Mm-hmm. You know, we see the normal behavior of predators, but it's on a nice table and they're all dressed up.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
And they're all wearing nice three-piece suits and dicky bows and stuff. Love that. Love the cheetah and the leopard there.
I was going to say, apparently there are leopards and cheetahs there too, so we're just kind of mixing our big cats up. It's not mm-hmm. just lions. It's all the big cats.
Okay.
And apparently the lead lion general with an eye patch is named Scaro.
Both a Doctor Who reference and a Lion King reference.
I was going to say, is it... because of Scar?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I really was like, is this a Doctor Who reference? Like, what, we're calling him Scaro?
It's a little nose.
Okay. No, I'm into it. I mean, I'll take a Doctor Who reference any old way, but I was like, Scaro. Okay. So we cut back to Dante and Lauren.
This is buddy cloy. Pointy.
Yes. So I should say, what the king lion is saying here is he's basically telling his general to go get Dante.
Yeah.
Because the czar would be annoyed with them if they didn't pursue Dante.
Fair.
So they're loyal to the czar. So he sends out Scaro to go get mm-hmm. Dante. And we cut back to Dante and Lauren. They're emerging from the waterfalls alive.
Surprisingly.
And discussing how much of this jumping off into the off things into the unknown Dante used to do before he met Lauren, which I love. But just as they're starting to flirt, because, I mean, really, how can Dante help himself with Lauren dripping wet and wearing only a thong?
Yes.
I got hot just typing that sentence. This is really, we're really pushing the limits here. Here comes a spear hurled through the air. That mercifully lands in his sporran instead
of an arrow,
elsewhere.
Oh, it's some kind of crossbow.
Oh,
arrow.
It's a crossbow bolt. Okay.
Yeah.
This is thrown by attacking gorilla people, your favorite character designs.
Yeah. No.
Gorilla people. Yeah, you're right. He's carrying a crossbow in armor.
For reasons. In the future, gorillas don't get proper weapons. They have to fight with
medieval
stuff.
Weapons, yeah. So then we go to next Prague.
Yeah, guerrilla warfare.
Next Prague, we have our main gorilla coming for Dante with a double-headed axe hoisted in the air. But Dante gets his bio blades through the armor of the gorilla soldier and into his stomach.
Ew.
Ow. Meanwhile, another gorilla asks Lauren for a lap dance.
Okay.
Maybe he'll spare her. And we find out that Lauren definitely does have those claws she mentioned earlier because her feather fans have razor-sharp monofilaments along the spines.
Okay.
Wouldn't she have cut herself like 10 times already?
I don't know.
She's been clutching these fans to her naked body for like many pages now.
The future.
The future. So Thank she slashes you. The gorilla's throat.
Yes. Okay.
Meanwhile, Dante is still tussling with the gorilla he impaled and basically like disembowels him.
Yeah.
That's on the next page. Mm-hmm. I couldn't quite tell what was happening because of the angle. We're sort of behind the gorilla and we just see some sort of Dante slashing.
Knowing Robbie as I do, it's like he's got two swords in him and he just pulls them apart. So slicing the guy in two. That's the action here.
That makes sense. It's a little vague and
very gory.
Yeah. Okay. Awful.
And the gorilla just looks like some kind of confused old madman.
It's pretty sad, actually. Okay.
It's an endangered species.
You jerk. Just as you think our anti-heroes may be getting somewhere, though, the crest informs them that they've strayed into the Hwange. Is that how you would say that?
Maybe. I don't know.
Hwange. H-W-A-N-G-E.
I mean, it's almost certainly as pronounced Hwange. Because
hunting grounds.
All the African languages were written in terms of the dominant language, which is usually English, so
okay.
Its pronunciation is English pronunciation of the spelling.
Okay. Excuse me. Apparently, the Hwange hunting grounds are where the mutated descendants of the first animals, that were experimented on to add the human intelligence.
So this is the island of Dr. Moreau. This is just the reject pile.
This is the reject pile, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they're smart and they're feral.
Right.
And we cut back to Solomon's palace, where Panther Man has Dante and Lauren's exploits on a large view screen. I guess the jungle is like rigged with cameras?
Probably. Who knows?
So, not about to miss an opportunity, he asks the assembled patrons of the casino to place bets on Dante and Lauren's survival.
Okay.
And back at the Hwange hunting grounds, where Dante and Lauren exhumed, pursued by some sort of humanoid animal, human creature things. It's kind of hard to tell what animals they're meant to be.
Yep. It's a little vague.
Yeah, it's vague. But an unseen sniper takes out the creatures as Dante and Lauren are about to reach a river. And Dante and Lauren swing across on a conveniently placed vine.
Always.
With Dante.
It's always a conveniently placed thing to swing on. This is Nicolai Dante. We know this.
And he's doing his best Tarzan yell.
Make like an ape man. Mm-hmm. Snap, blam.
Okay. But his rope swinging luck has run out because the sniper shoots the vine and Dante and Lauren tumble to the banks to be greeted by none other than Scaro on a chess horse. Pointing a large
chess
gun at
lion,
them.
Actually.
Is it a chess lion?
It's a chess lion.
Oh my god!
I think it's like after King Henry Windsor McCrae's lion.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I love that. I love blue that
lion.
For them.
I don't know what that means. Blue lion? Is that a reference?
I don't think so.
Blue lions.
So Scaro's got them on the ropes, and he then asks Dante how it feels to be on the bottom of the food chain. But I'm like, but they aren't. No. They're not the bottom of the food chain. They're like not even close.
I don't know.
I don't know what he's thinking.
Who knows?
You're supposed to be smart. What's going on? come on, guys. That's like fourth grade. You should know what the food chain is. Okay. So if you'll turn the page.
I will turn the page.
If you'll turn the next page episode. Suddenly, next episode, a large crocodile. I think it's a crocodile, right?
Yeah, if it's Africa, it's a crocodile.
It's Africa, it's a crocodile, right. Leaps out of the water and snaps Scaro between his jaws as Lauren
It's not
and...
even a large crocodile, it's quite a small one.
Is he small? His face looks big there.
A very big head, but a very small body. It's just, okay. Maybe it's a mutant crocodile, maybe it's a humanoid crocodile, maybe
it's
that.
Mutie. So Dante and Lauren escape, they steal the blue chess lion.
Mm-hmm.
The pair ended up stranded on a rock over the falls for some reason.
Wait, I thought they jumped off into the falls, into the water below. How did they end up on top of the falls?
They've
again?
Come back. They've come back from the jungle.
Okay.
So they've come through the jungle. They jumped on the chess lion. I know, this confused me
and
too.
That flew them
and then they
to
flew
the
back to the casino.
And then they get stranded on top. Did it run out
but
of gas?
But I guess they just are. What he says is, let us back in the casino. It's a jungle out there, right? So he doesn't want to be in the jungle anymore.
Why not just take the lion
Why not just
and go
leave?
Like flying
I don't
north?
Know. They still want to try and rob the casino.
Maybe.
I guess. Okay. Back inside Solomon's palace, Dante discusses his imminent fate with the Panther manager man. Mm-hmm. When up pops Scaro, not dead yet, claiming Dante for the House of Numa. Right? Okay. But no, say the gorillas. The House of Kong got there first. But no.
It's the classic play them off against each other gambit.
Yes, the elephant men of the House of Tantor. Want him. Yep. Dante sees an opportunity and says to the rest of the crowd that the bounty on his head would, you know, really pay off all their gambling debts. And suddenly the room devolves into a brawl for the right to claim Dante and it's the reward.
Chaos. There we go. Beautifully painted chaos.
We have a beautifully full page chaos.
Yes.
Fighting.
And if you want chaos to be really chaotic, you have to have a chimpanzee screaming in the front, the foreground, always. That's the rules of chaos. Screaming chimpanzee is necessary.
Yes. Yeah. And on the next page, Lauren sexily swings off the nose of a rhino and kicks the Panther Man in the face. And this is what I'm talking about when we get like a full on, like basically gynecological view.
That's true.
Of Lauren here. Yeah,
there's not much left to see there, is
it? But you can't say the F word, but we can see up Lauren's labia majora.
Things only her doctor can see.
Hey, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, you know. Anyway, it's a lovely painting of her. she kicks the Panther Man in the face, and he falls out of the window again. More crashing through the window.
Conveniently placed window.
Into the falls. They fixed the glass since the last time, and here he goes again. The paint was barely dry.
Yes.
And Lauren and Dante then sort of escape upstairs, where they make it to a vault hidden behind a giant painting of a sexy, like, cheetah woman in repose.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like they'll get their loot after all.
Somehow.
And back down, well, because they're taking this distraction, I guess, back downstairs in the casino, the crowd of patrons realize that the Panther Man has landed in the jungle. And the enterprising chimp announcer starts asking the group to place their bets on his survival.
And the weird, vague monster reject things
is
descend again. Still vague, but still
coming for him.
Threatening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and chimpanzee is taking back.
Yep, the chimpanzee. Not to miss a beat.
Can't trust chimpanzees. They're always out for a buck. And chaos.
All right.
They thrive on chaos. Okay.
Okay, so next
up,
we
please.
Move on to
the next one.
Devil's Deal. Yes.
Which is, we don't have a cover this time. We have Dante striding out of the waves.
We do. And who wrote it, who drew it, who lettered it?
Well, it was written by Robbie Morrison. And it was drawn by John Burns. And it was lettered by Annie Parkhouse.
So, yes, we find Dante at night on the beachy shores of an isolated island in the Pacific.
Oh.
The Crest is admonishing him for being there when he's got such a high bounty on his head.
The Crest is basically explaining the plot.
Good Crest job, Crest. Position.
Yes, good job, Crest. And good water, by the way. John Burns is doing really nice water here.
Well, I
admire his water.
This is one of his main wheelhouses.
Very classic.
Truly wonderful.
Stuff. This is where the painting really comes into its own. Anyway, back to the jungle.
So Dante makes his way into the jungle of the island from the beach. And suddenly some cyclops, vampire,
ninja thing.
Mole man thing appears. I did not know what to call this thing.
Appears cyber ninja probably.
But the face anyway.
Yeah.
And Dante fights them.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, he does.
Okay. He fights them a lot. There are a bunch of them descend on him.
I think they would just like shoot him from a distance, but no, they have to engage him in physical combat.
Cyclops, vampire, mole man. That was the best I could come up with.
I'm agree. I've drawn them and I don't have anything better than that.
Okay. Got it. So just as Dante's getting the upper hand, who should appear but
Akita Sagawa.
Akita Sagawa in yet another lovely and revealing outfit.
Yes.
She's got a whole wardrobe of these slinky, see-through things for us to enjoy.
Yes.
Apparently these are her man things.
Or bastards, as Dante calls them.
And she calls them the future of the empire, which is a little worrying. Sounds a little eugenic-y to me. And then she drops in that she was just visiting Mina and Carl. Remember those crazy kids?
Oh, no.
And she admonishes Dante for taking a side quest to rob a casino when he's supposed to be killing his mother for her or betraying her, whatever.
Yeah. Dante, you ADHD little boy.
So distracting.
Distracted.
Then Akita says the kids miss him and she's brought him a present from them. No. She hands Dante an ornate box, which he opens to find...
a finger.
Severed finger.
Boo.
We cut to a shot of the most traumatized kids possibly ever now in captivity.
At this stage, yes.
I mean, they've watched their mother get murdered in front of them. Their father was Big Daddy Kraken. Mm-hmm. Now they've been held in a place where Carl wets his bed and they make him sleep in it. And now they're cutting off his finger. Like, it can't get worse for these kids. Unless she makes that dog actually eat their faces off, it can't get worse for these kids. Mina's comforting poor Carl. He's got a bandaged hand, so this is Carl's finger we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
We cut back to Dante rushing Akita in anger, and she puts a blade to his neck and says she wants his mother under her blade, or she'll send him the brats in pieces.
Okay.
Bratwurst.
All right. Sure.
So Dante looks sad and
beaten. Those are the stakes, basically. Building up to
this is how she's controlling Dante, is by threatening the lives of these children.
The last arc of this.
That he instantly bonded to and became the adopted stepfather of.
Yes, because Dante understands children.
Okay, so if I was to psychoanalyze this.
Please do.
I would say that the reason that Dante is protecting these kids so hard is because he's got a lot of feelings that have been stirred up by seeing his mom again. And these kids are around the age Dante was when he was abandoned by his mom.
I see.
And so he is relating to them. He's trying to save himself through saving him.
He's identifying with them.
Saving them, yes.
That's probably exactly what's implied here.
Yes. Because it is a real, like, hard... He's definitely getting manipulated real hardcore for these kids. Right. So Dante looks sad and beaten.
I mean, it doesn't take much to manipulate Dante, frankly.
That's true. That's fair. and Akita struts away in the moonlight.
Indeed. Okay, so next up we have Sea Change, John Byrne's cover, where he's drawing and painting.
Well, it's not called Sea Change, but that is the headline of the cover. It's called Usurper.
But the cover tagline is Sea Change. Will Nicolai Dante be crowned Pirate King? Sort of stressing the subtext there.
Yes.
This is where we're having a big adventure of Nicolai Dante fighting his, well...
We'll find out.
We'll find out.
It's Usurper. Who wrote it, who drew it, who lettered it? Familiar faces.
It was by the same team from last week. Robbie Morrison, John Burns, and Annie Parkhouse.
Correcto mundo.
Yes.
So we open back at Fortress Dante,
mm-hmm.
where Lauren and Mama Dante have like a nice little chat on the ramparts about whether Lauren really loves Dante or not. And Lauren sort of correctly points out that Mama Dante has like more pressing concerns. And we get a great moody splash page with a four-person rogues gallery.
Okay, this is good. This is good stuff. This is some proper painting going on here. It's like tough to do.
This is working for you.
Yeah, this is working for me. I think a lot of the problem is to get the results you need from painting, it takes a lot of time. And you need to let it sort of sit for a while. You need to spend some time like getting the detail and so forth. And a lot of the time, there just isn't time to do that. Whereas this splash page, obviously, Burns has spent a good while on, and it really pays off. It looks great.
Yeah. So, I mean, Rogues Gallery, weirdly, they're not named for like a super long time, but we've got like a weird beast man, a foppish dude, a sexy lady in very revealing tight leather with sort of pinkish hair, and a Baron Samedi sort of
dude. Yeah.
And they're
voodoo
sort of
priest.
They're striding out in front of with the waves behind them, and we see what are ostensibly their ships. We see a typical pirate sort of style ship with three sails and three masts, and then a sort of space age kind of
couple of space age
ship. And
not sure how the wind jammer there is going to fare against all these motor vehicles, but anyway.
So a voiceover from the book Russia After the Romanovs by our friend Oscar Kokochka overlays the scene and informs us that the death of Big Daddy Kraken has left a power vacuum, and these miscreants seek to wrest control of the lucrative shipping routes near Escondida that the Kraken used to hold. So trying to stave off a coup, Mama Dante calls a meeting to divide these territories amongst these weirdos, but her power is clearly waning. I'm confused as to why her power is waning. Because she's just not as murdery as she used to be. Kind of seems like a weak reason.
Her best friend, second in command, got killed, and Dante's obviously a rogue force.
So she's just seen as vulnerable.
She's seen as vulnerable right now because of instability in her ranks.
Okay.
Presumably.
All right. So we cut to inside Fortress Dante. The rogues are drinking at a feast and discussing territory.
Right.
And Mama Dante is saying they have enough enemies with the Tsar and with Akita. Let's settle this as a united group of baddies. So the Tsar and Akita have more trouble trying to isolate and destroy their various strongholds. Yeah. And the pink-haired miscreant lady is like, this just benefits you because you're weak.
Mm-hmm.
And Mama Dante whips her wine glass out of her hand, warning she could have aimed for her eyes.
There is a Reddit forum called Impractical Armor, which is basically devoted to mostly pictures of women wearing armor in parts that don't need armor and bare skin where it needs armor in parts that do need armor.
Oh my God, I need to look at this.
This is a classic case of this woman really needs some armor in the middle of her chest, which is basically mostly exposed bosom.
Just bosom.
And then she has like armored plate on her shoulders and arms for reasons. Anyway.
Because it just looks good.
Because it is.
So the pinky says, you know, at one time you would have blinded me. Like, softy, this is why you're weak.
Okay.
Because you let me keep my eyes.
I see. Okay.
For talking back to you. Then the poncy miscreant fop with a mustache and a soul patch tries to hit on Mama Dante. Mm-hmm. While a weird gray dome-headed creature with sort of needle chomper teeth throws over a table because he's getting bored.
He's supposed to be some kind of shark creature.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
And he threatens Mama Dante.
Mm-hmm.
And who slides down a banister shirtless?
I can't think.
Nicolai Dante.
I'm betting Nicolai Dante, but never mind.
Nicolai Dante. He insults the group, claiming the Romanovs would have ended this feud much quicker with assassinations and gunship diplomacy.
Okay.
Or a duel. He proposes a duel between everyone in the room for control of the fleet. And I'm like, whose fleet? Everyone's fleet?
Everyone's fleet?
Mama Dante's fleet? The Kraken's fleet? Like, we're not being specific
lanes,
here.
Presumably.
I don't know. It's unspecific. So the Baron Samedi lookalike says, cool. He looks forward to feasting on Dante's soul. And the gray dome-headed
fangs
man. Pretty
sure Dante's soul has very little nutritional value.
Not part of this complete breakfast.
No.
But Gray Chompy Man is into it too, and Pinky suspects Dante will be fighting for his mom. But Dante manages to convince them that he's not doing that with his ambiguous face and open-shirted stance.
There you go. That's how we know Dante
Why is.
Why is
his shirt open?
Also, no hair. He shaved his chest again.
Yeah, I know you're getting mad about
I'm
that.
Sorry.
But I don't understand why his shirt is open.
I don't know. Because.
All right.
I think
it's not threatening. He's supposed to be threatening and commanding
because
here.
if he's naked down to the bare to his chest, basically, you're then allowed. Excuse me, I'm getting confused, but you're then allowed to have as much cleavage as you want on the page, which is what you have because these two ladies are both bearing it. Especially Mama Dante, frankly, that ain't holding in very long.
Yeah, her shirt is getting smaller and smaller.
That's actually. Look, from the top panel there, it looks like actually a sort of semi-practical piece of clothing. Whereas by the lower panel on the left there, she's just popping out.
It's shrinking.
It's getting smaller. That's only held in by tape and good wishes.
Yes. So Mama Dante gets in a dig that Dante is his father's son after all.
Of course.
And I'm like, not really, but okay.
Yeah. I'm going to get an atmospheric shot.
This is
Dante
way fairer than Dimitri would ever have been.
That's true.
But okay.
He'd have stabbed everyone.
Oh, everyone would be dead by
ago.
Now. I mean, come on. So then we go on to the next Prague, where Lauren fires a flare into the night on a dock somewhere near Fortress Dante. This
nice
is, I guess, the starting
murky
bell.
Shot of the dock there. I quite like it, even though it is murky. It looks good.
Hmm. See, sometimes it works for you.
It does work for me sometimes. Hey. It has to be said.
So I guess that's the starting bell, that flare, for the big group duel. And I'm like, can it be a duel if it's in group? Like,
it's
discuss.
Free for all.
I don't
know.
It's called
a battle royale these
yeah,
days.
Yeah, yeah. Battle royale makes more sense.
Yeah.
So the boats of the Rogues Gallery of folks are all tied together in the waters by Escondida. And this is where the duels will be fought.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a fun shot of Dante's little dinghy next to all the big ships. Is he still sailing that thing?
It's a metaphor.
Didn't he capture several other ships by now? Like, why? And finally, we get introduced to the Rogues Gallery.
Yes.
The Baron Samedi type is basically just that. He is the Baron hailing
the
from
guy
Haiti.
From Live and Let Die.
Voodoo dude who commands a crew of resurrected corpses. Nice.
Or something like that, yes.
Gentleman Jack Darcy, a great name, Robbie, is the, I like that, Gentleman Jack Darcy. I like that we're getting Pride and Prejudice in here with Gentleman Jack.
There's no culture and Robbie will not pilfer.
I'm into it. Listen, maybe it's just because I've been listening to Jane Austen before bed. This is
he's clearly some kind of like...
He's like a poncy fop.
Yeah, this is some kind of D'Artagnan-esque outfit.
And he's a turncoat captain who slaughtered his crew to steal a British Navy ship.
But
and
if you're
it's
going
bullions.
To be a turncoat, that's the coat to turn in.
There you go. It's a very nice coat. It's
very
a, you know what? It's
flamboyant.
It's a great coat.
It's a great coat.
And we have Scarlet Artaria. That's Pinky.
Artaria, who seems to be some kind of sex priestess.
Sexual vampire and disgraced former high priestess of the Succubi cult. Did we meet the Succubi cult? We didn't, right? This is a new thing.
Another sex cult.
Okay. Also, what is a sexual vampire?
I don't... Do we need to go there?
I'm really curious.
Okay. Sure.
I don't know. I mean, this is her baddie introduction. She's a sexual vampire. And I'm like, okay.
I also feel this painting here of John Burns is of the sexual vampire doing her culty thing with a sword. It feels a little half-hearted from him.
Yeah, you think he would show more of her cheesecake-ness her body.
He's done more of this in the past. So I'm like, maybe he's just like, really, Robbie, and eye-rolling at this point? He's like, we're doing this again?
He doesn't know what a sexual vampire is either, so he's leaving it indistinct. But anyway, then, not to be outdone, there's Sharko.
Sharko.
Wow, what a name. That's the gray, chompy, dome-headed dude we saw before. A psychotic killer who genetically engineered himself to be a human great white shark hybrid. Yes.
He kind of looks like the Mekon.
The Mekon?
Yes. It's a baddie from Dan Dare.
Ah.
It looks more like a treen, which is the Mekon species.
Okay.
Than a shark man.
Well,
yes.
Ding, ding, ding. We have the beginning of our battle royale.
Okay.
Okay. First up, Mama Dante versus the Baron.
Yep.
And Baron's army of corpses comes roaring in at Mama Dante. Isn't that cheating? Like, this is supposed to be a duel.
True.
Hello. Yep. And then we cut to Dante v. Scarlet.
Crash.
So Scarlet is in her boudoir. Dante kicks in the door and politely offers to come back when she's dressed in more than her black see-through robe. And Scarlet's like, depends on your weapon of choice, big boy. I added the big boy part because that's clearly what her face is saying.
Clearly what's going on here.
We cut back to Baron v. Mama Dante, where Mama rightly points out that the Baron is cheating. To which the Baron says, I found a loophole. They only told me to evacuate the living crew. And I don't think they did, Baron.
No, they didn't.
Who says, now everyone evacuate your ships of all living crew? That's pretty awkward. anyway, I love that the Baron is just like, no. In the contract of this duel, it said living people.
I had my lawyer go over this. He's a specialist in this kind of nonsense.
His voodoo lawyer.
Nonsense contracts.
So anyway, Mama Dante is blasting at the undead just when Sharko leaps out of the water and drags the Sharko. It cracks me up.
This is our lack of conviction from Sharko here from Burns. Is like, no.
He leaps out of the water and he drags the Baron and his fabulous hat underwater.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Dante is still mounting Scarlet, or she's kind of
mounting him by the looks of it.
In her Scarlet boudoir, while Mama Dante manages to blow up a barrel of oil and ignite all the corpses, the Baron's corpse army.
Because that's what barrels of oil are for.
That's what barrels of oil on pirate ships are for.
Mm-hmm.
But oh no. Here comes Jack Darcy with a gun in Mama's face, and he's still hitting on her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back at the boudoir, Dante and Scarlet seem to have had quite a romp. We've got a bunch of destroyed things around them.
Mm-hmm.
And while she's naked astride Dante, she pulls a dagger out to stab him. And I'm like, this is your big reveal. This is your sexual vampire. You just hide a dagger, and after you bang someone, you just pull it out. Like, that was sort of a letdown. It's kind of pedestrian. I was hoping for, like sexual vampire. I'm like, vagina dentata?
Well, we've done that already.
I mean, but you did a giant anthropomorphized vagina dentata. I mean, she could have one secreted, you know, in her.
I like the fact that we never see the huntsman's sheath ever, but now we're seeing the huntsman's sheath.
Yes, it's a metaphor.
It's a metaphor. That's what that is.
Okay. Anyway, next Prague, but we do get some lovely shots.
There's
here
a great life
of Scarlett.
Again, Burns is showing really where he spends a lot of his time.
She may have been indistinct before, but this flesh on flesh, nothing indistinct.
Astride
Dante's leg,
spectacularly painted lady.
I kept coming back and looking at it.
As you should.
Just kept coming back.
I feel
looking
I could learn
it.
A lot from that.
Mm-hmm. Next up. Next Prague.
Fire.
We open on a shot of fire as a blazing.
Yeah.
On the ship surrounding the Marauder and the waters outside Escondida.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Darcy is like, but can we fuck though, please?
I mean,
and
why
Mama
not?
Dante is like, I'd rather be shot. She literally opens her arms, shoot me instead.
Okay.
Burn. But just as he calls her a bitch and is about to shoot, here comes one of the now fiery undead up behind Jack.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yes.
Right, that was somewhat indistinct for me.
Yes.
Exactly,
but then we cut to back in Scarlett's boudoir.
Yeah.
It's a stalemate. She's got a cute red dagger at Dante's throat, and he's got his bio blade at hers. The thing is,
Dante's does
his
tricks.
Bio blades grow on command.
Ooh.
No metaphor to see here.
No metaphor. There at
but
all.
He's got the drop on her. Back to Mama Dante and Darcy's duel.
Okay.
Can you explain to me what happens here?
Okay.
She is standing in front of Jack.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
She shoots the undead person behind him, and then somehow she ends up behind him and shoving
him.
A cutlass through his back and out his stomach. I do not understand how that happened. I'm very
Couldn't
confused.
Tell you.
It's okay.
It's just
all right.
The way it is.
Thought I missed something.
The smoke and the flames and the confusion.
Just,
who can
yeah.
tell what's going on?
When you've got burning undead corpses
also,
laying about.
Also boobies and thighs.
And boobies
so
and
like,
thighs.
Who's paying attention?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who's
he's
really
he's still
here?
Working really hard on getting laid.
I know.
Meanwhile.
Sharko.
Sharko is taunting Mama from the water. As she's forced to dive into the waves from the deck of the Baron's ship because it explodes some more.
Okay.
And then we cut back to Dante leaving Scarlett all tied up in her boudoir. And he leaves it just in time to see Mama crawling aboard the deck of his dinghy.
Mm-hmm.
Sharko, apparently not such a great white.
Such a great swimmer after
yes,
all.
Yes, he didn't
like,
manage to overtake Mama in the water.
He's like
clothed
fully
and booted.
Clothed elderly
and
woman.
Elderly woman. Sharko didn't manage to get her. so that hybrid thing, it didn't work out too well for him. That should be his thing.
Sharko continues to be rubbish. Except he can jump out of the water like a torpedo, apparently.
Yes, he can. He shoots
unlike
up
sharks, which
from
can't
the water
do that.
Towards Mama in the dinghy, only to be decapitated by Dante.
Poor Sharko. I'm sorry.
Oh God!
I feel I should be taking this more seriously, but I can't.
Oh.
Anyway,
I need to stop. You really tickled me. Okay, control, professionals. That's what we are.
That's what we are.
Okay, so then it's Mama v Dante, the duel
we've all
been waiting for.
Oh no!
Mama says she knew it had come to this. And Dante snaps that sins have a way of catching up with you.
What sins?
Because she, the sin of abandoning your child.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
I know, right?
She spoiled toad.
She's like, is this all about abandonment revenge? And Dante's like, I didn't really think it through. I'm not one for analyzing things.
Or thinking about things.
Which we definitely know about you by now, Dante.
Definitely.
Like, that is a fair response. Very honest. She begs him to stop this because she doesn't want to kill him. And he brings up the whole, but you left me in the gutter when I was 10.
No, she didn't.
No, she didn't.
Went to some
she
nuns.
Left you with smelly, creepy nuns. Exactly,
yes.
Dante.
There's a
you
difference.
Escaped to the gutter.
Yes.
It's different.
Exactly. You chose the gutter. Which
you
is
chose
your natural...
the gutter. The gutter didn't choose you. Okay. And next page.
Next page.
Next page. And she says, you know, it was meant to be that way, maybe not. He says, that's the way it was. Didn't you hear me crying, shouting for you? And she says, every day since then. So she's haunted by Dante's cries. Every time I look at you, she says. And he says, it sounds hollow because she's pointing a gun at him. Put it down or start shooting. Whichever way, I'm taking command of the fleet. Well, no, if she starts shooting, I think you're not taking command of the fleet, but okay. But she just sort of drops her gun and says, take it all.
Hmm.
And damn us both to hell for what we've done to each other.
Have they?
And then we get emo mama.
Okay.
We get Emo Mama.
Yeah, Emo Mama.
Emo then... Mama Dante, and she's slumped in a crouch, and Dante is sort of hanging on to
Couldn't
the
just have, like,
rigging
had a drink
of his dinghy.
Talked about this or something? It seems unnecessarily.
Yeah, apparently in 2673, therapy does not exist.
Yeah, no, apparently not.
No.
I mean, just have, like, had a drink and, like, listen. This, I feel really pissed off about this, and she'd be going, "Yeah, you're fair enough. I mean, not bad. Do you want to take control of this? Because I'm tired."
Well, you know, it's kind of like I'm sort of having flashbacks to what the heck was that movie called? Now I'm going to bring up the movie not know the frickin' name.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was it wasn't called The Twins. It was called something else. The French movie we watched,
Les Incendies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is quite a movie, by the way.
Yes.
And it sort of centers around this idea of, like, a woman who sort of abandons her kid.
Mm-hmm. Kids, too, plural.
She only abandons one of them.
Originally, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. She only abandons the
it's
one.
It's complicated.
And so he kind of goes off on this path and ends up traumatized, and it sort of loops back around. And I won't say any more than that because I don't want to ruin it. But I mean, the idea is that this scene reminds me of that movie, which is, you know, the central drama is, you know, how does it come back to haunt you when you abandon your kids? And I mean, that mom actually tried to find her kid. She actually tried really hard, but she didn't. Mm-hmm. So the kid doesn't know that. And Mama Dante here is saying the same thing. She's saying she went back to the nunnery to, like, get him, mm-hmm. and he was gone. And she didn't know how to find him.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, probably from his point of view, he's like, you should have tried harder.
I mean, he has to take some responsibility here.
Yeah.
For being a little jerk.
I don't know, man. Childhood wounds,
they
really run deep. And if you don't deal with them, and we know, as Dante says, he doesn't analyze anything.
Nope.
He spent his early 20s screwing his way through his problems.
Mm-hmm.
Then he got caught up in his, dad's screwed up family. And now he's back with he's just ill-equipped to deal with any of this. So here we are.
Yes, he's sort of looking for some kind of purpose, obviously.
Mm.
And screwing over people, it seems to be his purpose now.
Right, but I don't buy it. I'm just going to say I don't buy it. I don't buy his double cross. I think we've still got something coming here. He's definitely going to double cross Akita once those kids are free. But mom doesn't know that he's not double crossing her. And I think that this is him in his mind going, I'm getting her back. He has something in mind for how he's going to pull out of this.
Well, we've got one podcast left of this arc, of the Pirates arc.
Well,
so basically
we have
find
one
out how this ties up.
We have one book club episode left. Yes. We've got some
Three,
interview coming
two
your
two
way.
Two stories, and we've got some interviews as well.
Yes, we do. But we have two stories left
that's
to
true.
Get through, John Byrne's stories of this arc. And here's a question. I don't know why I'm asking you this, like, on air, but are we going to do Sword of the Tsar before we end this season?
I don't know. Do you want to? It's a big thing. It sort of kicks off a whole different arc of the story.
I don't know. I guess we'll ask the listeners. Listeners?
I mean, what are we going to do instead?
Well, I mean, take a break until the next season, but
okay.
I don't know.
I don't know where we go.
We'll figure it out.
We don't have anywhere to go. We have nothing else to do with our lives.
Clearly not. So we are closing the book on Dante for today, but we will be back next week with surprise! An interview with Charlie Adlard.
Yes.
We did drop mention that we were going to be interviewing Annie Parkhouse, which we also did.
We've also done that.
But we first interviewed Charlie Adlard. So you're going to get a Charlie Adlard interview coming at you next
week.
What
he can remember about drawing a comic from a few pages of comics from almost 30 years ago in his enormously prolific career.
Yeah. Charlie's great. We're really excited for
it's
you to
one.
Hear our talk with him. We hope you enjoyed our podcast, and if so, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us ratings or reviews wherever you can, and tell your friends to join the book club and read along with us. Follow us on Twitter at PodTGDR. We're also on Instagram at PodTGDR. Let us know what you think of the podcast of Dante Comics. Whatever is on your mind. I'm Edie.
And I'm Simon.
And we will catch you next time.
Bye.